Good morning, Jacksonville, and welcome to another hour of this Ask the Experts weekend. I'm WOKV's Josh McCarthy, and this show specifically is your guide to everything jobs. Here, you can hear about new job opportunities and get free, extensive career advice from local business leaders themselves. The staffing industry's leading authority, Pete the Job Guy Langlois, explores the failures and successes behind Jacksonville's top influential individuals while discussing hot workplace controversies with an honest and entertaining filter. Take it away, Pete.
Good Sunday morning, all you hard workers, and welcome to Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy. That's me. I'll tell you what. It's been an interesting week. This week, as a matter of fact, today I just got it. I got a new car. And for a lot of people, a new car is something that you think about. It's emotional. There's a lot of things that you have to satisfy when you get a new car. Some people look for gas mileage, or maybe, you know, you want to have an electric car, or you need room for 117 kids, or what have you. For me, there's a couple of criteria that the new car has to meet for me. It has to be a big full-size car. I like a full-size sedan type, but it's got to be big. I like a heavy car. The other thing that I like are convertibles. I want a convertible. So I want a full-size convertible that's kind of heavy. And guess what? They don't make those anymore. So, you know, there's only one or two cars, and the one or two that meet that criteria, I can't afford. I can't afford a Bentley. I'm not going to drive that. But Bentley makes a great big old full-size convertible and some other ones. So what do I have to do? I have to go back in time. And I want the car to be fun, too. So what did I get? Pete the Job Guy is rolling around now in a 1975 Cadillac Eldorado. And you'll know me when you pass me, because incidentally, I drive like an old man, because I kind of am an old man. I'm in this powder blue drop top with a white interior, and the interior is really nice. The car floats on air, and it's fun, and it is a big full-size heavy car. Now I also need dependable. I need a car that's going to run, and I have the full service history and all that other fun stuff. I could never see myself paying $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 or more for a car, and I know a lot of you do, and that's all fine, but that's never going to be me. I look at the car as a disposable item. I'll have it for 1 or 2 years, and then I'm going to move on and get a different car, because that's just the way it is. Hopefully I'll have this one for a long time, but I can pack the family in it, head out to the beach, and have a good time. We have a great show for you today. You know, we're going to have Alex Stuckey, the original hard worker, in here with us. But my guest today is someone that's an experienced realtor. And a lot of people that are in real estate, whether you're in real estate sales or up and down the food chain with real estate, when you're a kid, you didn't say, oh, guess what I want to be? I want to be in real estate. You know, I know as a kid, I never said I want to be a recruiter. I want to be in staffing. You end up there. And I want to talk to Kim Sessions about her journey. But I'll tell you mine. You know, as y'all know, I was in the Navy for quite a while. I grew up in Massachusetts. I came down to Florida. But the way I got into recruiting was interesting. I was in technology. I always liked technology. I developed electronic performance support systems. And I did this for a large Fortune 50 company. And it was great. I liked technology. And I learned early in my career, not too early, after I had a couple of stints at doing different things, I learned that if I wanted to make an income that's commensurate with the amount of effort I put forth every day, I had to get into sales. Meaning, the more I did, the better my performance is or was, the more I make. And that's just the way it is. And with sales, I make more calls, I go on more visits, I prepare, I do more due diligence up front before even calling a client. And then I got really well-versed in different things, different training. I went to a Dale Carnegie training for a lot of years, taught it even as an assistant instructor, you know, attention, interest, conviction, desire, close. I knew the whole sales process. And, so I liked technology, and I had to be in sales because I had to hit a certain income. And, you know, my name isn't Dr. Job Guy, it's Pete the Job Guy. And there's no, in order for me to hit that, I have to sell something. And there was a company in town here in 904 in Jacksonville that needed someone to run a technology staffing division. Hadn't done it before, but I knew sales, knew the sales process, and I also knew technology. So I kind of, you know, I interviewed, and it turned out that, wow, this is great. Not only am I in sales, but it seems like the more people I help in my job, the more people I help find employment or find a contract assignment, a temporary, or the more companies I help by finding people they couldn't find on their own or finding them faster, you know, the more I help people, the more deals I closed and the more money I made. It was so exciting. That's how I ended up in staffing. So it'll be interesting. I always like hearing the career journeys of the people that I have on as guests today. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to the world famous Kim Sessions. All right. And Kim, let me ask you, how did you get into real estate as a profession?
Well, actually, I was a teacher for 8 years.
Oh, my.
But I was always fascinated with real estate. Bought my first house when I was 25 in West Palm. It was a 1920s house, gutted the whole thing, and have just always had that fascination. And my husband encouraged me to get my license, and we were trying to have kids and try to change things up a little, so mm-hmm. I just went for it.
Well, that's ambitious for a 25-year-old to take on a fixer-upper, mm-hmm. but let me ask you this. Okay, so you bought it, you fixed it up. Did you turn around and sell it for a profit?
Yes, we did.
Oh, maybe that got you bit right there. Went, uh-oh, I did something right out of the gate. So
we actually were not ever planning to move to Jacksonville. We thought we would be in West Palm forever. And we actually paid, I think, $125 for the house.
Oh, I remember those days. I remember those days. My first house I bought in Mandarin, and it was for $57,000, a whopping – I'm old. I'm a dinosaur. So we had a 57K house back in the day that was – and that was a lot. I remember those days. Now, are you a realtor?
I am a realtor.
Okay, I don't know how to say that properly because, you know, some people are realtors, some people are real estate agents, and some are real estate brokers, and I have no idea what the difference
is. Okay, so a realtor is actually a trademark name. You mm-hmm. have to be a part of the National Association to actually use that name. Mm-hmm. So you obviously are licensed, but you have to be a part of the association. You can be licensed and not be a part of the association, therefore you can't use that that word next to your name. So typically when I advertise everything, I have my name, comma, realtor with the trademark right next to it.
Got it. So let's say I am right now thinking about selling a home, okay? What are some of the things, okay, maybe I've already come to that conclusion. You know what? I'm going to sell my house. What are some of the first things I should do?
Well, the first thing you should do,
which is call Kim Sessions, right?
Of course. The first thing, which is everyone's non-favorite thing to do, is declutter. Go through closets, depersonalize, things like that. It gets very overwhelming because you open a closet, and you have a small closet, and you take everything out, and it fills a whole room. It's amazing what we just shove in places. So really, it's not really cost that takes a lot for a lot of people. It's their time.
Well, you know, and declutter to me would mean, oh, let me get all the stuff out of the main living spaces and throw it into the closet or bring it up into the attic. No.
No.
Purge. Even the garage, too? Should that be?
Yes.
So you're talking about maybe temporary storage or just...
It could be. Yeah. Depending on the situation, you could have a house that wasn't even updated but was super organized and clean, and you would maximize and get a great price for it. You can have an updated house that was dirty and not organized, and people view that as you don't take care of your house, and you will not get the maximum price you can for your house.
Got it. Okay. So, you know what? I get it. So we declutter. What about, you know,
deferred maintenance. I mean, a lot of times, you know, you have ripped screens because, and some of us take this for granted. Well, that's I'm just going to let the buyer handle that. I mean, really, these might sound like simple questions, but I know that people think that.
I get this a lot. Well, I'm going to leave a couple of these obvious things out because the inspector has to get, you know, ding a couple things. But the reality is if you take care of these things before you put it on the market and get a contract, you can have a handyman or you could do it yourself. When you start getting into your home being under contract, per the contract, you do need to use a licensed contractor, which means you are most likely spending more money. And frankly, buyers are walking in and they're looking for things. So if they see a rip screen, that's so easy and cheap to fix. Mm-hmm. You don't want them to see that. You want them to walk through and see an immaculate house. And they will be impressed. They will give a really great offer for that and just have the confidence that the house has been really taken care of.
You know, I watch HGTV a lot. Okay, I'm an HGTV junkie. Look, I know Chip and Joanna. By the way, they named their son Crew. My 22-year-old son is named Crew.
I know.
And I'm going on record saying Chip and Joanna copied me, okay? That name should have been copyrighted a long time ago, and they owe me some kind of royalties. So, Chip, call me, and we can work it out amongst our people.
That's a good compliment.
but I notice on the HGTV shows when, you know, when they're looking, when couples and families and people are looking for new homes, one of the first things they do, they go, oh, this room, look how blue this is, or look how pink this is. Should people paint their house before they sell it? And or if they have neutral tones, leave it? These are questions I don't know.
So a lot of people can't visualize, so I do recommend neutralize. I don't go into every house and say, you need to repaint your whole entire house. But if it's a color that doesn't really meet the mass, a lot of people will walk in and they can't get past it. And painting is very easy fix. So, you know, the grays are the new neutrals right now. So we really recommend sometimes it really will bring more money to the table by painting.
Yeah. Let me tell you this. Now, years ago, I thought I was going to be all slick. And I remember I fixed up a house myself and I got it all ready. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do this FSBO thing. I'm going to for sale by owner. I'm going to do this. Okay. And I'm going to save any type of real estate commission. And I want to tell you what happened. I had people call me up. Well, first, the people would schedule appointments and they would come in. And I had a record number of non-buyers. I had weirdos calling me up at weird times. And they would look and they would act like, oh, yeah, we're going. Hey, and then they'd say, well, would you be interested in doing kind of a rent-to-own? No, I didn't want to. I didn't say rent-to-own. I said selling my house for sale by owner. And then I had all these people that didn't get any kind of approval. And I wasted so much time. It was ridiculous. And this is long before I knew you, Kim. I sold the house through a realtor because I had to. Because, I mean, my time, it was crazy. What do you say to people that are, you know, possibly considering that option?
So we're actually seeing more for sale by owners right now because we are in a great market. But it's not as easy as it is. There's a system in place, and there are strong statistics that show that you are leaving probably money on the table by not listing with a professional that does this on a daily basis. You are also putting yourself in a safety situation. We are in one of the most dangerous occupations. We have to really pay attention. We have to field out people and really try to qualify them before we even meet them, because I am putting myself in big jeopardy meeting a stranger. So the safety is a huge factor. Time. I mean, you're taking a lot of time. You have to leave work to go open the house up. Buyers, I mean, when they want to see a house, they want to see a house. So not all of them are going to want to see it from 7 to 9 on the evenings or on the weekends. So you really want to strategize your house to be available at all times.
Yeah, and I can tell you from firsthand, that was the biggest problem. Because look, home buyers are hard workers, like all of us, right? Mm-hmm. And when are they going to come out to see it? Mm-hmm. They're going to see it around their non-work hours. Mm-hmm. I had to take time off of work, or at night I'm tired and I'm showing house, or it's the weekend, I'm showing. It didn't work into my schedule to have mm-hmm. two jobs. Selling mm-hmm. a house became a full-time job, and weeding out the kooks. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't mean to be ugly, but there's kooks out there, and I had to.
Well, I'm sure your phone was also ringing with agents to try to take your listing.
I did.
I did,
and I eventually called one because I was frustrated, and I wished I had done it sooner because my house sold about 30 days later.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was with the real buyer. Yeah. Okay. Anything else for someone that is thinking about, or they've come to the conclusion, I'm going to sell my house. What are some things that should go through that person's head, or what actions should they take at that point? We already know that, okay, you're going to fix up your house, okay? Don't leave it to the others. Mm-hmm. Call a licensed realtor. Mm-hmm. Call Kim Sessions, and we're going to give out all your information so that people do call you. What else should they do?
They should have a game plan of where they're going to go next.
Mm.
We are seeing this very often right now, where someone's putting their house on the market and it's going in a week or less. And a lot of people are like, well, we'll just list it and see. And they have nowhere to go or an idea. And so really kind of have an idea. Decide if you really want to sell your house, because
right.
once you go
yeah,
for
you
it.
Yeah, you dip your foot in the pool right there. You're going for a swim
yeah.
pretty quick.
But just have a backup plan of what you're going to do next if you're not ready to buy, rentals and whatnot. And really understand, I would say, the financial part of selling a house. Have an idea of what the closing costs are, what are the fees are, so you really know what your profit is at the end of the day, and you have no surprises.
Got it. Okay, now let's flip it around. I decide, here I am, I'm a home buyer. I'm going to buy a home.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things I need to do before I start going out looking? I mean, first thing people do is they go out and they start looking. Oh, let me look here. What are some of the things that home buyers need to consider right off the bat?
Get pre-qualified first.
That would have saved me a lot of time.
So the biggest thing a lot of times is people just, they think they can afford X and they start window shopping and even start looking, and then they can't afford it. And then you have your set on a certain price house and you can't get it, and then it's a big struggle. So it's very easy to get pre-qualified. I would say that's the absolute first thing that you need to do. And then I would really start to think about how you live your life. Where do you go? How do you live your life, not only in your house, but within a vicinity? Because, I mean, if stores are very popular to you or whatnot,
mm-hmm.
You really need to think about what is in the area and can it fit your price point. And also, within that time, too, I would interview agents that do take buyers out and see if they're qualified to know what you want. Do they have the knowledge and the ability to get you the best that they
can. Right, because you might be thinking, okay, I'm going to concentrate on this zip code or this mm-hmm. school district or this area mm-hmm. because of these reasons. And they list out the criteria in a conversation with a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say, well, have you also considered this? Because that checks every single box, and you might get more bang for your buck. And there's also more things that are going to fit in your family situation or whatever the individual situation is.
Yes, we're also in a we're in a very low inventory market right now. So it's really, I wish it was as easy as just typing in the information on MLS and houses pulling up. We're having to literally go out there, call agents that specialize in certain areas, see, do you have anything new coming on the market? Reaching out to just anyone we know, anyone in that neighborhood, and really try to shake some branches and get some possibilities out there for people. And that's super valuable.
What's a rule of thumb let's say average household income, combined income, dual household income, let's say $70,000. They have enough money. What is it, 10% or 20? What is it they have to put down now?
Oh, there's so many products out there. There, you could do 3, 5, 10, 20.
Okay, I remember back in the day, if you made $25,000, you could qualify for a $1.25 million home. And you know, because everybody knew nobody was going to pay the mortgage and they were going to take the home back at some point, right? Mm-hmm. Remember all those, oh boy, for the bust. But now everything's, there's so many products that can fit different people. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you got to shop what your payment, what the total cost is, what you're looking to accomplish. Is it 30? Is it 15? Mm-hmm. And, you know, FHA, VA. You got all these different programs out there and adjustable, non-adjustable. I don't even know what the heck they all are.
Oh, my gosh. They have something for everybody. But that's why it's so important to pre-qualify again, because if your credit is not that great, it can affect what your interest rate would be. And that could actually push you out of a whole price point of a house.
So. Right. And that would be a real pain. If you do cart before the horse and you're out house shopping because you think you can qualify for a $400,000 mortgage, and then, you know, there's a blemish or two on your credit, or there's an issue here and there, and you're surprised you have to put, you know, 30% down. Your interest rate kicks you up another $300 a month. And, you know, you wasted a lot of time looking at houses, and it probably has to be a colossal disappointment, right?
Yes.
You've probably seen that before from time to time.
No one likes to window shop.
Right. Right. So if I'm decided that I'm going to buy a house, I have to know what my criteria is. Well, number one, I have to get pre-qualified to see what my amount is so I can help establish my criteria, and then talk to a realtor because, you know, you might have one thing in mind. You might learn some more. Anything else with buying a home?
Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, you could talk to a realtor before you talk to a lender, in the fact that they do have a lot of connections with lenders as well. So really, you know, there's so many options out there. I would definitely say, you know, get the experienced agent first. All the other pieces will fall.
Good, good, good. You know, Kim, I have a few other questions I want to ask you, but you know, stay with me because right now we have to take a little bit of a break at a news weather update, and we'll be back with Kim Sessions. This is Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy. Welcome back, Hard Workers. If you listened to the first half, my guest is still here, the world famous Kim Sessions, and she is a licensed realtor, and I had a few more questions I want to ask Kim. So what grade did you teach when you were a teacher?
Oh, gosh.
Come on. What grade did you teach?
I have a very interesting educational background.
I want to hear it.
So my first teaching job was actually at a juvenile facility. I was 22 years old, and I got my degree in social psychology. What do you do with that?
You teach.
So I got certified in middle school, and I was going to save the world. So I drove an hour each way from West Palm. I taught at Pahokee in the middle of sugarcane fields and taught 13 to 18-year-old juvenile delinquents. And it was with a barbed wire.
Wow.
It was big time. I had to be taught self-defense.
Wow. You should have a crown and a scepter. But go ahead.
So I did it for 2 years, realized I couldn't save the world that day with that. But I decided I wanted to do at-risk, so I went to elementary. So from then on, I did third to fourth elementary, and I did at-risk. Then I moved here to Jacksonville, did 1 year here at risk, and then decided to try the good old regular fourth grade, and I finished my last 3 years in Ponte Vedra.
See, this is what I love. Part of the show, you know, the whole show is about your job and careers. And no matter what you're doing this year, you know, you might not be doing it next year or 10 years from now. Our careers go through some reinventions, and ultimately, you have to keep going until you find the one that works best for you and your lifestyle, and you seem to be right in your wheelhouse. What would you tell 20 or 21-year-old Kim Wood back in the day, right? What would you tell Kim back then to look out for, or maybe a pitfall to avoid, or something to help accelerate? Or would you just let it roll?
Golly, no. You know what I think the biggest thing of my biggest growth in the last 4 to 5 years was, I never really had goals, wrote them down, and came up with an attack plan to achieve them. I am actually doing that with my kids now at age 9 and 10. If I had that when I was in my 20s, I would have been rocking it early on.
Hindsight's 2020. There's so much I would say, you know, here I am, present Pete. I'd call up, you know, past Pete and say, dude, do not do XYZ. And when you meet Alex Stuckey years down, just run for the hills because that guy's nuts. That's what I would have told myself. Would have saved me a lot of heartache and pain. No, I'm just kidding. You know, this is, do you want your kids to grow, be in the real estate business?
Oh, I would love for them to. I highly doubt they will, but you never know.
You know, my son is a recruiter, and he's giving it heck, and I'm real proud of him, and he does a good job. I didn't expect him or encourage him to do that. It just kind of fell into it, like we all kind of seem to fall into our careers. Let's see. If someone right now... Let's do a little bit of a commercial on Kim Sessions. First thing I want to tell you is Kim sold me my house, and it wasn't easy. And she helped me negotiate. She helped me throughout the selling process. I live in the Isle of Palms area, and it checked off every single box that I wanted. Or, you know, back not too long ago, there was more inventory that was out there, and I think you showed me 10 or 11 houses that met my criteria. But this was the exact one, and I absolutely loved it. And I would not be in this house if it wasn't for Kim Sessions. I'm just telling you that. So, Kim, how can folks get in touch with you, and how can they see your inventory of homes that are for sale that you have listed?
Well, the easiest way would be to go on my website, because it's just easy, KimSessions.com. I can be reached out that way. You can see not only my listings, but all the listings in Northeast Florida. Also, I answer my phone a lot, and you can also reach me on Facebook, Instagram. I'm pretty much everywhere.
Good. Well, what is your number?
My number is 904-537-8380.
Okay. Any parting comments, Kim?
No, I mean, if you have any questions whatsoever about real estate, just give me a call. It's a fun and exciting thing, and it's a great adventure for everyone.
Good. You know, and I appreciate you being on. I know you're very busy. And the good thing, guys, anybody considering a career in real estate, you just heard from Kim. She transitioned well. There are some challenges, right? Because I know, you know, from a work-life balance, sometimes you're not as available on certain times and other times you are, right? I mean, does it work out well between you and your husband?
Yes. I mean, the whole thing is trying to control your time and your calendar, just like anything. Anything can take over your life. So just trying to put everything in your calendar and just be committed to that.
Great. And that's Kim Sessions, Sessions. Kim, I appreciate you being on Hard Worker today. You have a great rest of your Sunday and a big week.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
All right. That was great. You know, Kim was a great guest, and she said a lot of things, and I know we can take some nuggets out of there. Alex, my main man right here, what did you drag out of what Kim said? And let's relate it to our industry a little bit.
Sure. So one of the things that I took away from that was that real estate is now becoming a little more work, right? It's taking and finding homes that may not be for sale yet, right? She's talking about having to canvas an area, talk to the other realtors. You know, and this is something I've bought
and really asking questions and understanding the people that you're working with and offering additional solutions. It's the market's changed.
Right. And there's a lack of inventory. And what happened in the past, obviously, when there's a lack of inventory, you know, people just say there's lack of inventory and prices go up, right? But what's really important here to note, I think, is that you've got to go the extra mile and do something different and be creative. I think I've sold over a dozen houses in my life, and that's not a lot. But I can tell you, when you want to go find a deal, right, I sent letters to everybody, go get the list from the city of Jacksonville and get a list of everybody that had property exactly where I wanted it, the mm-hmm. kind, yep. and to send letters to them.
Right.
And so that's something that I think they're having to do, is they're having to go in and work a little harder to find inventory. And it's no different than what you do every day.
You know, I you really tied that in well, because as a professional recruiter, I hear all the time that there's a supply, demand, and inventory shortage for good quality candidates. We hear on the JOB news report each week that we get from Aaron Mills, we hear that there's more open jobs than there actually are qualified qualified candidates. I hear clients that reach out to me frustrated, and they say, you know, I've had open positions for a long time, and I just can't find good quality candidates. And I want to tell you a couple of things. Number one, there has not been a candidate genocide. Good quality candidates didn't all get killed off. They're here. They're actively employed elsewhere. Okay, the unemployment rate is so low, so your pool of people that are actually in the search, you know, looking at boards and looking at posted positions, your pool is very shallow right now, you know. And right now, if you can't fill positions that are very, very specialized in skill set because you're thinking it's a supply-demand issue, or you're gearing up for your seasonal demand, let's say you need 300 customer service reps for a defined or undefined period of time to help you with your peak call volume, and you're just, right now, you know what, there's nobody there. I've had an ad out for 2 months, or I've worked with three different agencies, and they're big box players, and they just can't seem to supply me with candidates. I tell you this, you're working with the wrong agency. You need to reach out to Pete the Job Guy, because right now I'm the hustler. I'm surrounded by hustlers. We find people that other people can't find. And I'll tell you what, you try me one time and we will demonstrate that we can find the candidates, the quality candidates that you need. You can reach me, www.petethejobguy.com, or you can call our S&I company's office right here in 904-904-713-2550. SNI companies were uniquely qualified to find the people that you can't. Just like as Alex was saying, Kim was telling us the market's changed, inventory's low. That means good quality salespeople have to work harder.
That's right. It's all about being an agent of change, right? I met with a couple of people earlier today that own a business, Leyland and Brandis Moore, and they were asking me, you know, I said, oh my gosh, you know, we were talking about the fire industry because they're in the fire industry. They have a company called Apartment Fire, and, you know, nice small company, but they you've got to adapt and you've got to change. And if you're not an agent of change, you're gonna end up going the other way and you're gonna get crushed out by the competition. And we talked about, you know, Kmart, right? Kmart was the biggest retailer out there. Now they're gone, mm-hmm. right? Because there's always going to be that one redneck that's going to show up and do it a little better and work a little harder, right? And that turns
that right.
out to be Sam Walton,
right?
Right? And now you have Walmart everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always going to happen. So you're either going to be that agent of change or you're going to get crushed. And I think that that's really important, Pete. And that's why you're so successful, right? You have creative ideas. You think outside the box. You have yourself surrounded by folks that are just like that, and they work harder. And that's why success breeds success.
You got it. Yeah, and that is so well said. And I think, you know, it's part of being in the profession that I'm in. And I talked about it at the top of the show, where I chose a profession that I could get compensated based on my effort. The harder I work, the more due diligence I did up front, the more work I do in my profession, the more money I make. And that's important to me. That's not important to everybody. And as I also stated at the beginning of the hour here, is that the more people, the more placements I make, the more people I help. I'm in a profession, doggone it, that I help people. I help people sometimes when they're at their most vulnerable points in their lives. They need money. They need an income stream. Okay? They need a job. Or some of them, they just need that next step in their professional career. They're doing fine now, but hey, maybe I can get you closer to home, a little bit more money, better benefits, career trajectory that you're looking for. Those are some of the things that I can do. And I help companies find people that they can't find on their own. I love helping people. You know, when my head hits the pillow, I feel good every night because I help people. But there is no shame in life in cashing a big check. And that's always the way I've felt. And that's why I put myself in the space that I'm in. I help people, and the more people I help, the more money I make, and that is good for me. That's not everybody's motive in life, but that's part of mine, and we're all different. Gears turn differently, and there's no shame in that for me, you know, understanding what I want. But I love helping people, and like you said, I'm an agent of change. I listen. I ask more questions. I'm surrounded by people that are going to ask a ton of questions. So if you're going to engage me, I'm going to know what all your buttons are, because I'm going to push them. I'm going to find out what you need, whether you're a candidate or a client. But then we do something that other folks don't do. We have a course of action to find the folks that others can't. And we take massive action to get it done. And we are absolutely relentless. When you hear that hustle play, boy, I got my hustle. I got that hustle every freaking day because it's important to me to please my clients.
And, you know, one of the things that I think that new salespeople and people that have even been in sales a long time that they miss is in the past we did this consultative selling, right, where you ask lots of questions and you figured out the pain and you go through this information gathering. And that's great. And that's still important today. But one of the things that's changed is that buyers are a lot more educated. You know, that when we talked earlier, one of the things that the real estate folks are dealing with is Zillow, Trulia, right? Realtor.com. All these people now are experts in the buying, at least they think they are, right? All your buyers now are more educated. They can see the inventory.
But
they
that's across all industries, isn't
it? That's exactly right. So now everybody has access to Career Builder and Dice and Indeed.
That doggone internet, right?
So what happens is, but here's how it affects you. As a sales professional like yourself, now the buyer is more educated, which actually elevates the great sales folks. Because now what happened is you've gone from having to dig out all the information and find them and having to educate your buyer to now you have an educated buyer. And it makes the vast gap between number one and number two significantly better.
Wow, that is so well said because, you know, I remember I used to teach sales. You know, the five steps of the selling process is attention, interest, conviction, desire, close. And we taught the segues in between, and maybe I'm at stage four, and then the buyer asks a different question. I'm back to stage one, and here's how we transition back. You guys know, because a lot of people sell widgets.
Right.
You know, we sell human capital. I sell people is what I do. But it is, you can't, back in the day, you know, you'd get a phone book and a card and, you know, go make 125 calls. You're going to reach maybe 20, 25 people, and you're going to have five that show interest and you have one buyer. That's kind of a standard formula, 125, you know what, 25-1. That's typically the way it works. 125 calls, 20, 25 connects where you actually talk to a decision maker, five show interest, one's a buyer. It's a fair ratio. I think anybody that's selling anything would agree. But those could be cold calls. Okay, cold calls make no sense right now. Imagine calling somebody and saying, hey, I have this. Do you want to buy it? Or, hey, how are you doing today? Let me tell you about this. It doesn't work because nobody answers phone anymore. We're conditioned not to. I can call my wife right now. She wouldn't answer the phone. But if I text her, she'll text me back. Okay? And you know everybody does. It's just the way it is. My kids do that to me. You know? You know, Preston's here. He does it to you, doesn't he?
Call
him. He won't answer his doggone phone, but he'll text you. It's the way it is. That's the way the buyers are. They're all hidden. Okay. Now, if I do get into that conversation and I haven't done my upfront due diligence, because right now, as Alex said, and as Kim was telling us, the market's changed. All that information is out there. You're dealing with educated buyers no matter what the product is.
And that's why you have to be the consummate professional salesperson. You have to have your information. You have to know why your product and why you have value. And you got to be able to deliver that value proposition quickly. You've got to be able to explain why that candidate you have is on the market or not on the market, but you have them available and how you're going to be able to deliver them. And you know what? It's something that we talk about all the time. And that's this. When you're talking to your staff, the one thing that none of our competitors have is the you. And you make 100% of the difference. It's all about the you.
Yeah. You know, that's something I think a lot of salespeople don't emphasize is like when you ask, okay, what are your key differentiators? Number one is me. Okay, not only do I know my product inside and out, I know the hows and whys, I know everything about my product. I can articulate my value proposition. If you engage Pete the Job Guy, you engage SNI companies, any one of our companies or any one of our sister companies, and by the way, we're part of a proud member of GEE Group, and you can look at our ticker symbol on New York Stock Exchange. It's J-O-B, that is job. Very creative because we're recruiters. But I know my product inside and out. But not only that, I know my competitor's product. I know what they can and what they can't do. I know that. I can articulate my value proposition compared to somebody else. So if anybody ever looks at me and says, why would I use you, Pete the Job Guy, over Alex Incorporated or Josh Incorporated or Aaron Incorporated, I'll be able to tell you. because I shop and I know what they do. I know what their pluses are and their minuses are, and I know how I can deliver a superior product every time.
I also want to jump in because the way that you're saying value proposition, so I want to make it clear that a value proposition is not a slogan. So if I ask you a question like, hey, Pete, why do I want to use your business? It's not going to be that cute little three-letter or like three-sentence thing saying like, oh, choose me, and then whatever. It rhymes.
Right.
So your value proposition isn't that. What is it that you're trying to sell in your
value
proposition?
For me, it's, you know, and I ask my clients, you know, what are you looking for? What specifically? The when do you need it by? What is the best delivery mechanism that works best for you? What do your best providers do? If you could change three things about your best providers, what would that look like so that they were perfect? Nobody's perfect, but what is that perfect package? I spend so much time up front really, really understanding what it is they need. And if I can't do certain things, you know, if I can't, I have to be as upfront and honest. I can't skirt the issue and say, you know what, I'm going to give it my best, or, you know, there are times when I can do that. No, doggone it, I just say I can't do it. All right. Oh, and I just got the evil eye. If you know what the evil eye is, it's very comparable to the stink eye, okay? And I know Aaron has told me certain things that I can't say anymore. One of them is doggone it. And you know what? Doggone it, Aaron. I love saying doggone it. She told me I can't introduce guests and Aaron as the world famous person because
if
everybody's world famous, then nobody's world famous. But I love saying that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm Pete the Job Guy. These are the things I say. These are Pete-isms. Do I have to knock it off, or can I say it once in a while?
Maybe like five more times, that's it.
I'm going to put it on the Twitter. I'm going to put it all over the Twitter.
Back to the Twitter. Going back to what you were saying about value proposition, I, again, want to reiterate that it's not just something that you say. It's all about delivering, and it's all about the essence and what you give off and your energy and your everything that you are, Pete, is what you're delivering to your customer. So just really want to make sure that we're not building value propositions around one or two sentences or cute slogans or cute logos. Like, value propositions are your drive. It's what you're going to deliver at the end of the day, making sure that your client, your partner, your customer is happy.
And so part of that is the education, right? Even though we have an educated consumer, you have to bring something more to the table,
right?
You can't just say, oh, well, you did your research. That's all great. I have nothing else to add. Mm-hmm. As a consummate professional, if you're not able to come in and add new value and be able to educate them even further and then collaborate with them to help them to formulate a future decision, and then you've got to do the sales job, right? We called it for 100 years the close, but you've got to persuade them, right, that is the best solution, and here's why, right? If you're not able to persuade them to make that decision, it's like I told the joke again this morning to Laylin and Brandis. I said, if there's three frogs sitting on a log, and one of them decides to jump, how many are left? And everybody said two, and I said, no, there's still three. Just because you decided to do it, you didn't do it. You've got to actually go do something. So that persuading people to make a decision is not just to make the decision. It's to actually go implement it. Go do it.
Okay.
Buy this and let's move forward so that you do achieve that ROI that we talked about.
Outstanding.
Yeah. We should be a commercial for Nike. Do it.
Just do it.
Hey,
Aaron, how do you catch a unique rabbit?
Unique up on it.
That's right. And how do you catch a tame rabbit?
No idea.
Tame way? That's so stupid. You know what? That's the greatest thing about live radio is you can't go back and edit that. Because that happened.
It's going down in history, and I'm going to tweet about it right now.
Right. All right, let's tie this back in. I want to talk about Kim Sessions. And again,
yeah.
Kim sold me my house, and it was not easy. I was a very educated buyer, and I'm someone, this was my first rodeo, you know, and I'm also someone that wants to, you know, get as much bang for my buck.
That's right.
Type of a deal. So, you know, the realtor that you elect, you know, sometimes they have to have claws and teeth, you know, and if I'm going in at a certain amount and, you know, and I'm justifying it with comps and other things, I want teeth and claw representation, you know, and I'll just say, I'm not saying Kim is a monster with teeth and claws, but I'm going to say she did a fantastic job because she knew me as a buyer, you know, and she was able to, she knew my pushes and pulls, showed me the exact area that I wanted.
She had a relationship with you.
Right, right. And, and you know, that was prior to. Like, she really spent a lot of time up front, showed me a few different things, and we took what the framework that she did and said, you know, and on a Saturday, she showed us 10 homes, 10.
Poor girl.
No, she did. I mean, she gave, and she's a busy person.
Yeah.
But she gave her entire Saturday was to the Pete the Job Guy Langlois household. That's what happened.
She showed that you were important.
That's right. That's that building the relationship, building rapport, building relationship. And without that, there is no sale, right? And so I think it's the same thing. You've got to be a consummate professional, and then you've got to build that relationship so that somebody does want to buy from you.
Right. Yeah. And that's right. And you know what? I'll tell you guys, look, as Pete the Job Guy is rolling around town in a 1975 powder blue Cadillac Eldorado with a drop top and in the white interior and going real slow so you pass me and wave to me, I'm one guy that knows, and I hope you all know it now, that the market has changed. No matter what your product is, it ain't about sitting around making a bunch of calls trying to find somebody. Your buyers are educated, and you have to treat your buyers, no matter what widget you're selling, sales, services, it doesn't matter. You treat your buyers like they're educated, and you have to understand that your personal key differentiator is you. All right, hard workers, have a fantastic rest of your Sunday and a big week.